This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Why, hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm just fine, Rick Emerson. How are you?
I'm fantabulous. All right, we're getting ready to begin today's program here. So this is going out to my peeps, David Walker and Eric D. Snyder, who were here. Last week is just a huge, you know what it is? It's like looking at that AIDS quilt from a long, long way away, where you can kind of pick out, you know, like which one is for, you know, which one is for which, you know, the celebrity, and which one is for which, you know, like you know, the athlete, and which one is for whatever. But it all starts to blend together the further away you get. It's the worst analogy in the world. It's the best one I could come up with. So looking back at last week, so I know that Eric D. Snyder pitched in a lot. Mr. David Walker was here. We had our friend Jim Willig, who was here. It seems like other people as well. Greg and Sarah, of course. I can't forget them. They pitched in.
But Sir Ian McKellen, I believe he popped in at one point.
Exactly. And Jerry Mathers as the Beaver. But I can no longer really remember who was here on what day. But it does seem to me that at one point, both Eric D. Snyder and David Walker were in the studio, and they were here as I played the O Holy Night, the sort of warbling, wailing, ever so slightly retarded sounding fellow who was giving praise unto the Lord with his particular rendition of that song. And I said that we had a companion piece to that, and they said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I'll play it at the end of the show." And then the end of the show came, and it was not played because I, Rick Emerson, have a brain full of holes. So we're going to begin today's program with that. So this is going out to Eric and David and to all y'all. So this is the Rick Emerson radio program.
Praise the Lord Jesus, in the name of the Lord. Amen. I'm going to sing Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Amazing Grace. I want people to sing with me too. Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you.
And with that, we'd like to welcome any new subscribers to the program today. Thank you for giving us your money so that you might be subjected to that song, probably against your will. I mean, frankly. First message out of the gate just says, "I hate you for playing this song," followed by one that just says, "Die, die, die." Excellent. That's how you begin. It's not really the beginning of the week for most people. It is the beginning of the week for us. It is Tuesday, December 14th. 2010. If you're drawing near, that ye might be amused / tormented. It is 20 minutes after the hour of one, and this, the month of December in the year of our Lord 2010, live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade.
What?
That was a little instant karma. That was the universe immediately taking me down just half a peg for my hubris just now. The Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsies is what I meant to say there. Whimsies and amusements of all fashions and varieties. It is Tuesday, and welcome to Day 12. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to be part of today's program. 503-505-6964 if you want to get on board with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, recipes, death threats, whatever it is you might have today. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to chime in with the chorus of die, 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 please, 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 die, you can do that via Skype. That's Rick Emerson Show. You can also text if you like. That is the Rick Emerson text box. It's open on the website. You can email. Finally, it's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com.
Or you could call and say die, die, die in person.
If you like. If that's a thing you feel is going to be a good use of your time. I'm not going to tell you how to spend your few remaining years on this earth. I mean, God forbid that you don't live according to your own internal barometer and principles. Dawn could be emailed as well. That is dawn@rickemerson.com. dawn@rickemerson.com and so forth. So we are back. We are here. We are live. It is Tuesday, December 14th, 2010. Before we do anything else, I want to say a couple things. Today's program brought to you by the fine folks at Sorrell's Vintages. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne is where they are located. They are the folks directly across from the Baghdad Theater and right next to Powell's Books. We'll talk more about them later on in this hour. We also want to thank if you heard yesterday's Legion of News, Best of the Legion of News, and then Best of the Rick Emerson Show, the second program ran more or less without incident. The first, we had a little bit of a sketchiness that happened as we were beginning. So Robert Wagner and Thomas Gill on Cascadia.fm side and our end over here put things back together, and all the King's Horses were able to provide entertainment to you, the huddled masses, yearning to laugh and love again. So we want to thank those guys for doing that. It is 503-505-6964. Coming up today, we have Penis Watch, which is really the best way to rejoin the program, isn't it, Dawn?
It is.
And there's really nothing that puts a smile on your face like a story involving penis.
Only thing that could be better is if there was a story where somebody, got sucked into a wood chipper.
You know, we don't have that, but we have a story about Nazis, apparently, because
we
I
do.
See over on the board, in fact, it just says penis Nazi. So either there's one fantastically entertaining story or two, component stories, which when put together equal the same amount of greatness.
Indeed.
So we have your Nazi Watch coming up today, Penis Watch coming up later on. Mr. Aaron Duran will join us for another installment of The Weekend Geek, and we have another exciting episode of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. That's all coming up, as well as these headlines, which are being tracked by Dawn Taylor as we speak right now.
A 14-year-old is stapled to the wall of the classroom by his classmates. I had more, and I put it somewhere else. Ah, there it is. Chernobyl reopens as a tourist attraction, and a birther is court-martialed for refusing deployment.
That was your instant karma, by the way, right there, for mocking my instant karma.
Yes.
For being hubristic.
I wrote some things down, then I flipped to the page over, and I was looking at the wrong side.
I do actually wonder, because people get a little notification, when it's like, so-and-so has joined the proud, the army of Rick Emerson listeners by subscribing to... And it's not like it really influences what we start the next day's show with, but I do sometimes think about it. Like if somebody has just said, well, I've heard so many good things about this program, it's just, it seems like they've got a really refined sense of humor there. It, you know, they are a breed apart from the typical rabble that is taking up the broadcasting spectrum, both on the radio
really
and the internet.
Smart.
It's cerebral. It's the thinking man's talk show from what we've heard. And then it's like, and then they just tune in, and it's like the first thing we've got is just some crackhead mongoloid screaming Amazing Grace at you. You know, I'm just saying. By the way,
welcome.
Somebody has a Google image search for you to conduct today, Dawn.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this like a scavenger hunt on the internet now? People are just sending me off to look for things?
Somebody
like
says,
Easter eggs?
If Dawn is going to reread that Amelia Earhart story, and maybe you are, maybe you're not, I don't know, says, you have to Google image search the following phrase. Coconut crab. You got your iPhone there that has Google search on it?
I do.
You should just search that right now. All right. So you're going to...
While you're chatting, I will look at coconut crab.
No, I'm just going to narrate you typing things into your phone.
Okay, here we go. Coconut
crab. Now, are you starting at Google or are you starting at the image search?
I'm starting at Google.
Okay, and then you'll hit the coconut crab and then you go to images.
Yeah.
All right.
And then image results for coconut crab... And,
I bet it's awful.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've seen this before.
Is it horrible?
Well, you may have seen this before. It's like the huge, huge crab, and somebody took the picture I'd seen before, and somebody took a picture of it on the side of a trash can, so you could actually see.
So you get
like,
a sense of scale?
How big the freaking thing is. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, why are we doing
one
that?
Around a telephone pole.
Oh, do not want. Why?
There's one on somebody's body.
Jesus, why are we doing... Is that because... Do these live on the island where they're looking for Amelia Earhart's remains?
I guess maybe. There's a guy holding one.
Yeah, no, I'll pass on that. Yeah. That's the world's worst pet. I don't ever want that. All right, well, in an even.
There's one, I guess, eating a coconut, which I guess is why they're called the coconut crab.
Okay. Yeah, I think that the search for Amelia Earhart might be focusing on the wrong place. You might be checking the stool of the various crustacean life.
Apparently she was eaten by a giant crab.
Yeah. That's no way to go. You know, nobody wants to end their life coming out of a crab.
No.
I'm just saying. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Tuesday, so Dawn Taylor is rejoining us. First and foremost, so how is your husband, Patrick? So he was going under the blade today, as Twisted Sister says.
He is. Later today, he is going under the blade.
Now, what are they? Are they removing something or are they adding something? Because they're equally exciting in different ways.
Well, here's the thing. He's still sick, and they still don't know why, but he's gotten considerably better. The thing is, he's never been in any pain, even though he was, like, yellow and weak and that sort of thing. But they did every single possible invasive, you know, rapey test of his body that they possibly could, and still don't really know, other than the fact that there's this lymph node that lives, like, directly between your gallbladder and your liver.
Right.
And his is all swollen up. And his gallbladder is inflamed, and he comes from a family with a history of bad gallbladders, and there's been some liver thing going on. But they still didn't know. It's like one of those things where they go, you got all this stuff going on, but we don't know why, because it doesn't make sense that they all are happening at the same time.
Are you picturing, I have to ask this, are you picturing your own personal House episode unfolding, where there's like, you know, Foreman and 13 and whatever, they're all just gathered around a whiteboard, and they're going, but that'll kill him. Well, it's our only chance.
Well, that's it. I don't think you actually haven't been looking at my Facebook, I don't think.
That's not true. Not as often as you've been updating it.
But I did post at some point, a photograph of the whiteboard where the guy drew me cartoon pictures of all of his insides to show me where all the stuff was.
Did you say it's lupus?
I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for them to think it was lupus, for them to treat him for something, and then it didn't work, and he just started bleeding from his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, but at any rate, we've been going through this thing where there's been this battle between, like, the many, many doctors that have just been trying to figure out what's going on with him. And, I mean, honestly, there have been, like, a couple of internists, a kidney guy, the two gastroenterologists, we talked to a hematologist who's also a cancer specialist. This is going to cost a fortune, by the way.
I didn't want to ask. That was because
We do have insurance.
See, and I wasn't going to ask that either. I didn't figure that was I didn't figure that was a question allowed by decorum. Yeah. Because I know he's got like a real job.
He's got a real job and he has good insurance. It's just going to be a matter of seeing
the deductible and the copay and
right,
the whatever.
Once it all comes in at the end of the day of like how much
now does this,
they actually pay for.
Does this fall into the category of things marked? Is this catastrophic coverage?
No, this is just regular, like, something's wrong with you coverage.
Because catastrophic coverage, I guess that's maybe when a thing kills you or is about to kill you.
Yeah, if you have cancer or leukemia or something like that.
Your head falls off or something, that's, you know, but this is just sort of bad, not catastrophic. Okay.
So anyway, it came down to this thing where they were going, well, we've done every single test we could think of. The only thing we could do is, like, maybe poke around inside of him and take some samples and look at tissue. But the thing is, they don't really do exploratory surgery the way they used to. And my personal thought is it's probably because if a surgeon doesn't cut you open, you're unlikely to sue them. You know, if their choice is to not operate on you, as opposed to the opposite. So, but the thing is, what it's basically come down to is they did a test on him called a HIDA test, which tests the gallbladder, came back positive. His gallbladder is wonky. He comes from a family with a history of gallbladder problems. So basically, we're pushing to just take the damn gallbladder out. And while you're in there, now you have an excuse. You have a reason to be in there. Then look at other things while you're in there.
This is like when the cop sees the taillight out, so he has a reason to search your trunk for cocaine.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Now, what does your gallbladder do? I mean, do you need that? Do they have to replace it with a wooden gallbladder or something?
You can live without your gallbladder. It has something to do with bile and with acids and with it's another one of those filtering systems for your stomach.
But I mean, does it do it? If you don't have it, do you have to take a pill or compensate in some way? Does your body go, well, I guess we don't have that anymore?
If you don't have it, generally what happens is there are just certain foods that you can't really eat because you're not filtering them well. Some people can't eat spicy foods anymore. Some people can't eat high fat foods anymore. It seems to vary from person to person.
Mm.
So, you know, his diet may change after this.
I'm just saying, for me, now this is not the, you know, this is Patrick's life, he's his own. I'm just saying that is, for me, that's a mile marker that you're closer to the end than you are the beginning. Not chronologically, but just in terms of, like, I think it was Sam Kinison who said, like, if you're at a point in your life where sugar, you know, or like salt kicks your ass, I mean, really, what are you here for? I mean, it's like, I'm just saying, now Patrick, of course, is probably going to come out of this just as healthy as he. Maybe not as healthy as he went in. That seems like the wrong way to put that. But I'm sure that the side effects will be minimal.
Well, it's all sort of ridiculous because he's always been just ridiculously healthy. And he comes from ridiculously healthy stock other than this gallbladder.
Except for the gallbladder. That's the Achilles heel, Don.
That is. Of his family, the Achilles heel is the gallbladder. And even now, he's like just laying around the hospital bored out of his mind because he actually feels okay. Hasn't been in any pain. And he's like, he looks better. Pretty much almost everything is back to actually feeling a lot better. But the problem being, again, that's what it came down to, is the surgeon who didn't want to cut in for no good reason, because maybe we could sue him if something went wrong, was going, well, you know, everything's getting better. You probably just send him home and he'll get better. The other doctors are going, yes, but we don't know why any of this happened. And if we don't find out why it happened, and it turns out he has, like, I don't know, cancer, and we send him home, and then we don't do anything about it, and 3 months later he gets sick again.
Well, can't you just sort of passively raise the threat that you'll sue him if he doesn't operate?
Really, I just started getting really stabby, just like going, just do something!
I mean, because that's my thing. If they're so afraid of malpractice suits, which it seems like they are, it seems like you don't have to actually come out and say it, but maybe you just imply in some sort of a way that, like, if you don't do something, like, you know, I do have an attorney. I mean, I don't want to call the attorney. We'd hate to get lawyers involved in this. It's just that you don't want the hospital. Yeah. I'd just like to resolve this, you know, with a minimum of fuss, and they know what you're saying there.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, and of course no one has actually said this, but I think it comes, from the surgeon's point of view, it comes down to, well, if we don't operate on him, he might get better and he'll be fine and everybody will be okay. Or maybe he'll get sick and that'll still be like somebody else's problem. If I do operate on him and like something by some twist of fate, he dies and we go, you know, his gallbladder wasn't even that bad. Why did you open him up? Then I could sue them. So, you know, I think that, of course, they're hesitant in that situation. So,
whenever we probably shouldn't be making a record of your attempt to engage in some sort of legal intimidation or extortion.
But really, what is gallbladder surgery is one of the simplest, easiest ones. It's about as close to an outpatient surgery as you can have anymore that involves removing an organ.
So you don't want to say that, because then that's the whole. You start saying things like, no. It's, I mean, what are the odds that anything could? And then it just cuts to you like buying a wreath somewhere. So you don't want to do that. Somebody just says, of course she has insurance. How else can the insurance company refuse to pay for the coverage?
Exactly.
Ha, ha. Thank you. Yes, that's fantastic. All right. Well, in any event, we'll pass our thoughts along to Patrick. So, what time is that happening? So, it's around 1:40.
Yeah, it's happening. He is scheduled for surgery at 5.
Okay.
So, I don't know how long it takes.
Now, has he had surgery before?
No, he's never had any surgery for anything.
Is he weirded out by the idea of a guy like cutting him with a knife? Because that's a strange.
He was.
It's weird.
He was day before yesterday because they were going to. They said they were going to operate and they wouldn't let him eat and they were going to do it. And so he was really nervous about it night before last and trying to sleep and, oh, I'm getting surgery the next day. And then yesterday came and the surgeons were like, no, we don't want to do it anymore. No, we don't think we need to. So then it was off. So then it was like, then he ate. And then they did this other test. Then he ate. Then it was like, oh, it's back on again. So now you can't eat again for another 24 hours. And he's like,
Jesus.
Damn it. So now he's just frustrated and angry and wants to get it over with. He's not actually weirded out or worried about it anymore.
This is like some sort of a, you know, sleep well, Wesley. I'll most likely kill you in the morning.
Yes.
Kind of a thing.
It has been like, he's been in the hospital for a week.
Well, and this was the reason I asked if it was, you know, if they expected anything, if there expected to be any weird side effects or whatever, because they don't keep anybody in the hospital for more than a day or two now if they can avoid it.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, there's like so many people who are either uninsured or underinsured, and the hospitals are, you know, overcrowded and understaffed. So it's like they don't want anybody there. If they can possibly just, like, bungee you up and send you home, they will.
And he was very sick for the first few days. I mean, he had partial renal failure. One of his kidneys wasn't working. His blood pressure has been really high. And they've been, like, giving him stuff to keep his blood pressure down, which I think it's because there's something weird. And he has a little bit of high blood pressure anyway, but because there's something wrong inside, his blood pressure, you know, keeps shooting up. So there have – and a lot of his lab tests have just been really weird and wonky.
Are they going to save something for the surgery?
I'm hoping so. I called him because unfortunately he doesn't have
there's no tumor to keep.
He doesn't actually have a big tumor or actual gallstones.
No, I went to the same place. Yeah, don't worry about it.
No, he's got like some kind of, they just kept calling it sludge. When his mom had her gallbladder out, they said it was like sand.
Sludge?
Yeah, I think it's like something. I think eventually they would turn into gallstones if they were in there long enough, but they're very fine. It's the same stuff that gallstones are made out of, but instead it's like...
It's like a granular sort of...
It's more
of a,
granule.
All right.
Granular, yes. And so I asked him if it's possible when they take his gallbladder out and then dissect it or do whatever, if you would ask them to save the sludge.
So it's basically, he's like filled with powdered Ovaltine before it becomes a rich chocolatey drink.
Right. When you take Alka-Seltzer cold medicine and there's that little bit of white crap still left
that's
in the bottom of the glass, that's what he's got in his gallbladder.
By the way, this has nothing to do with anything, but speaking of sludge, so I was playing... You know, I'm not like much of a. I'm not much for like games. You know, like board games and stuff. But I had this insane moment over the weekend where I was playing that. I don't want to say it's a hideous game because I know you play it as well. It's just that I'm not. Again, I am not much of a. I am not much of a gamer in the sense of.
Oh, I know where you're going.
In the sense of like playing Monopoly or some crap. And I had that horrible Bananagrams game that
I've never played that. It's I know your wife loves it. I've never played it.
And it's not a horrible game any more than Scrabble's a horrible game. It's only horrible to me because I do not enjoy playing games. So I was at that was in Provo this weekend. And relatively speaking, my weekend was much, you know, it was really pretty boring. I mean, because it's like I went in the hospital. I basically had to fly to Provo and just sit there and just.
You were in a different kind of hell.
Yeah, just sit there and hate my life for a couple of days. But it's like I can't get that angry because my wife only makes me go, as I've said, like one every three trips. I mean, she's going back. I mean, she's going back in March, and then I think she's going back again in August because she's, like, the only child, and she has all this Mormon guilt about, like, going back and, like, proving that her parents are fertile and, contributing to the growth of the kingdom of heaven. But I'm not going to have to go back until, like, next November or something. So this is fine. It's like I just got – and I've told her, and she knows that, you know, I say this in the best possible way, that I know that my job when I go to Utah is just to punch a time clock. Like, that's my thing. It's like I gotta put in a certain amount of hours. And the thing is, it's like whenever I'm there, it's not just for her parents. It's like her parents call over any other relatives or friends who know that the daughter is married so that they can see that she married. And I have to, like, look presentable. And they're like, and none of this is said to me, but I understand it. Like, no one has ever told me I must, you know, sort of shave and look, you know, look decent, look normal, and look prosperous. But is, you know, I think especially as a guy, you just understand that that is your job sometimes. Your job is to look, especially in the, in a small Mormon community, your job as the husband is to look like a good provider and a good, strong, clean-cut head of the household. And so it's like I think, you know, that like a certain change of clothes with me, and I gotta get up, and I gotta, you know, make sure that I, you know, that I'm that my hair is trimmed and everything, and I have to casually reference, you know, like, well, the TV show that I work on, you know, which is the sort of stuff that I try never to do, like in polite conversation, because you look like a dick. But it's like there, but it's the whole thing of like, because I think the only photograph they had of me in the house for a long time when Laura and I first met was I just looked homeless. I just had like a neck beard and like scraggly, because I was getting ready to move and I was unemployed and I was getting ready to move to San Diego and I was like a philosophical depressed guy without a job. And I
can see why she would love you so.
I just looked terrible. I just looked like one of those kids from the West Memphis 3. I just looked scraggly and bad. So I think forevermore now her parents are trying to demonstrate to everybody else that their daughter didn't, and by extension, that they did not raise her poorly because the daughter did not choose badly in terms of husbands. Bad enough I'm not Mormon. So I try to look as close to Mormon as I possibly can without actually putting on, like, the ring or the underwear or whatever. So it's like I got to look clean-cut and respectable and whatever. But that's kind of my whole weekend is just sitting around. And part of that involves being social and just sitting there in the living room just eating just, like, the blandest concoction of food you can possibly imagine. I mean, that's like when you talk about Patrick having to go on a bland diet maybe after this surgery. It's like lots and lots of, like, lots and lots of, like, instant potatoes or, like, white rice, if they're feeling exotic, white rice that's been cooked into sort of a sludgy.
So now, is this just her family? Because my experience with Mormons has been, you know, that, yes, they do, you know, go for a lot of the sort of casseroles with the mushroom soup in it and stuff like that. But still, they do tend to eat pretty well as a rule,
don't they? I don't know what it means. I mean, what do you mean by eat well? I mean, there's a lot of it, I guess, if that's what you're saying. I mean, it is everything in my in-laws' household. And this is my experience, maybe not with everybody, with a lot of people in the, specifically the Utah Mormon culture. Mm. Now, maybe that's different with other Utahns and with other Mormons. The Utah Mormon culture, in my experience, it's the confluence of those two things. And they live in Utah County, in Provo, which is the most conservative county in America. So it's not like they're taking a lot of chances there on a lot of things that are, you know, they're really exotic or whatever. Which surprises you because you figure that so many people go on missions and that they would bring back, like military guys did, the flavors of exotic lands where they had traveled. Yeah. No, it's like, you know, here's another thing we had. Like green beans out of the can. And everything, nothing in Provo is done until it's just like a paste that has no internal, until the molecular structure has broken down enough to where everything must be rendered spreadable. So they've got the green beans with some sort of horrible, like Campbell's something or other used as a sauce in it. But then
with the canned French fried onions on the top.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like you were there. How did you know that?
That is a classic white trash dish that we never ate when I was a kid because my mother had this thing about like never ever serving anything that would be white trash.
Right.
Because she grew up poor and it's like so we're poor but we were classy, you know? And so it was only when I was like an adult that I would go to places for Christmas or something and people say, "Hey, we're making the traditional green bean casserole," and I'm like, "I have no idea what that is."
Oh, that's exactly
And people
exactly
would look at me like,
is.
"What's wrong with you? Why do you not know the green bean casserole?"
I don't know what the sauce is. I think it's like cream of mushroom soup or something.
It is.
Yeah. So canned green beans, canned cream of mushroom soup, and then not like onions that somebody has purchased and dried. No, it's just a box of dried onions from French's.
And as far as I can tell, the only reason those onions exist is to go on that green bean casserole.
That's it. That is the only reason that they're there. And then, of course, you open the fridge and there is the obligatory loaf of white bread. You know, and it's like, man, you've never met a people that love white bread as much as my in-laws and their neighbors. I mean, it's just so, and I'm not, I mean, it sounds like a dick thing to complain about because, you know, Patrick's having his his ankles taken off or whatever, you know, and it's, you know, whatever. And again, there was a lot of it. It wasn't like it was unhealthy food as such. Yeah. Like, it's not like I'm in a mud hole in Rwanda or something. But
those funeral potatoes are mighty tasty, though.
Oh, God. And then, like, the nut cups. Like, you don't even go and be started on nut cups. And then, like, ambrosia salad.
I know people who love that ambrosia salad thing, and it just, there's something about it that just kind of skeeves me out a little bit.
Marshmallows aren't an ingredient, friends. They're just not. Or, like, the candied yams. That's another thing where it's like they're just melting marshmallows onto things. And I know I sound like a snob, and look, you all know me. I saw your snarky comment about Totino's pizza, by the way. So, you know me. Rick Emerson's not a snob. It's not like I don't eat my share of things that are trashy, but it's like I think my things that are trashy, here's the deal. I think the trashy foods that I enjoy are overtly trashy. They come out, and there's no pretense. They announce themselves. Spray cheese announces itself as being not real food. It's just crap. It's junk food that you eat. But it's like the thing about that meal is, which bears a startling resemblance to most of the things I ate growing up, because my mom was a good cook, but she was like under the thumb of my a-hole dad. And my dad, his whole thing was like American staples via like the sort of suburban atomic age, you know. It's better than nature. It's from a can, you know. Where you know, like Tang was better than orange juice. Mm-hmm. Wonder Bread was better than real bread. That is, you know, jelly is better than jam. If you can take something and remove all the natural elements, it makes it even better. And so that is what my mom cooked growing up, and that's what my in-laws are eating. You know, and then it's like game time. So it's like we're sitting there, we're playing Bananagrams, which is like a Scrabble without the board. And this whole argument ensued because I tried to use Slurm, which is a beverage from Futurama. And then my charming mother-in-law, who used the phrase, the gays, like 70 times while I was there, often while coming off a Glenn Beck marathon, and complaining about how this used to be a good neighborhood until a certain kind of person moved in. And then she would, like, arch an eyebrow as though we were supposed to know what that meant. And here's the thing. With my mother-in-law, when she says a certain kind of person moved in, that could be any one of a dozen kinds of people.
Gay people, Catholics,
yeah.
Midgets.
Anybody brown.
Circus people.
Yeah. It does, you know, really, there's no way to tell. But then she and I started to get into this fight about, she said that you couldn't use a proper noun in Bananagrams because you can't use proper nouns in Scrabble. And I opened my mouth to correct her, to tell her that you can now use proper nouns in Scrabble. And Lara, like, booted me under the table, like, into my ankle. Because it's like every conversation. And I don't know if Patrick's, you know, family, I don't know how that works. If you've ever had, like, in-laws in the traditional, like, sitcom sense. Mm-hmm. I've never been married before or anything. So it's like It's just like having Endora around from Bewitched, like, all the time. And if you get into any argument with her, it just becomes this Vietnam, you know, this protracted land war that you're never going to get out of. I just decided not to argue. I'll end this discussion, because then I'm just wanting some other guy bitching about his in-laws. I will sum up my wife's family. And again, it's not that they're bad people as such. In their way, they mean well. But, you know, everybody has a lot of in-laws that, in their way, mean well. Hmm. But we all know what that means. We all just means that, like, you know, that means that, like, if you were to look inside their heart, you could see that they don't have malicious intent. That doesn't change the fact that on the surface, they're just awful in many ways. And I'm including most of my family falls in that category, too.
I'll say my husband's family, his parents are divorced, and there's a distinct chasm between the two sides of the family. The mom's side of the family are all great and awesome and friendly and loving, and you can talk to them about anything and say anything. The dad's side of the family are just like, at best, they all act like they're afraid they're going to get cut out of the will,
right,
if they, like, have a good time or say the wrong thing. And then there's just his father, who is just this horrible troll of a man who's, like, racist and homophobic and tells the most horrible jokes.
But do people excuse it? He's a product of his time.
I think they did for a while, and now pretty much no one just speaks to him anymore.
Excellent. See, that's not, and I'm not saying that my wife would do this.
But it took a long time to get to that.
And that's a family where there's probably other relatives. Like, everybody can turn their backs because they feel like there's somebody else that can take up the slack.
Yeah.
And nobody does, but you can tell yourself that. Well, I'm not going to visit Aunt Matilda anymore, but Joe will do it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like my wife, you know, she's an only child. And so it's like she's painted into that corner by biology. This will sum up my wife's family. So this is the same conglomeration of people who were last year. It's her parents, her mom and dad, and then her aunt and uncle, and, like, I don't know, like a cousin or some damn thing. And we were all there, and it's like, and I know maybe most families are like this, but it's like, again, Mormons, they love games. They love playing board games because they got this thing called Family Home Evening. Hmm. And Family Home Evening is Monday when everybody's, and it's good in theory, everybody's supposed to stay home, not go out to a friend's or to the movies, supposed to stay home and just enjoy doing stuff with your family. I can get behind that in theory, but it results in a lot of, like, bad home theater productions. You know, and it's, you know, terrible singing groups, like a sort of, like a low-rent Kelly family. And board games. So last year we're playing this game called Scattergories. And if you all have never played Scattergories, all you need to know about it is this. Is they just give you, for each round, a letter and a category. And you got to come up with the most interesting thing that fits both. So I would say, like, it's a food starting with C. And, like, I would say, cookie. And you would say, like, crawfish. or whatever. Cabbage.
Carrot.
Yeah, cucumber. And then you go around the room and everybody goes, well, I came up with cucumber. And somebody else says, well, I came up with cilantro. And then it's like whatever, you know, is like the most interesting or has the low number, biggest number of letters or something or, you know, whatever. So that's how you play it. So we're playing this last year. The letter that comes up is K. The category that comes up, and this is a completely true story, by the way. My wife could verify this. The letter that comes up is K. The category that comes up is hero. Heroes is the category. The letter K. So we're going around the room. Everybody writes down the thing, and then they go around the room and read their answers. So the letter's K. The category is heroes. They get to my wife, and they go, okay, Lara, the letter was K. The category is heroes. What have you got? And my wife says, because I believe he had just passed, my wife says, Kennedy, Ted. Ted Kennedy. And, of course, that immediately doesn't go over well because they're really, really arch-Republicans and they're conservatives and he's, you know, a philanderer and the whatever. And so there's this long – and I think there could be, like, a vote. Like, people can, like – either they vote or they just like to argue. They're arguing about whether to give her points, whether Kennedy counts as a hero. There's a huge argument ensues. Like, this giant conflagration about whether or not she can use Kennedy as a K for the category of hero. And I think they finally agreed to give her, like, half points for it or something. Then they get to – a member of her family who I will not name for the sake of politeness, who for the letter category and the category of heroes just says the Klan. And it's like that thing where the family member says this and then Laura and I immediately, she just like puts her hand over on my knee and just like squeezes really, really hard. The message being, don't say anything, don't respond in any way. And so then my wife proceeds to try to have a measured, rational discussion with this relative of hers as to why, of all of the possible K words in the English language for the category of hero, they would go right to the Klan. And I don't even remember what the outcome of that conversation was, but I remember thinking at that point that, like, this was – that whatever sins I might commit in my life, whatever failings or shortcomings – whatever faults I may, be saddled with and whatever poor choices I made, I am working that debt off right now. So I got to tell you, when I die, if there's some afterlife, I ain't going to no limbo, no spirit prison, no way station, no interstitial place. I am working off my sins now, every minute I spend in that household. Jesus. The only other thing I will say is this, because I posted about it on Facebook. Salt Lake has the body scan machine at the airport.
Yes.
So I posted something last night where I said I can see the body scan machine, and I felt compelled, for the sake of show content, I'm like, I got to go through. Got to opt out and have them grope my penis.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was all disappointed. The thing is closed. They don't even operate it. And I asked the guy, I said, do you even use that gun now? And he goes, no, we haven't used it for a few days. So I guess they've just turned it off. They just don't even use the thing anymore. So that was just a huge...
So that means no groping either?
No, I hate to disappoint everybody, but it was just a straight x-ray machine walkthrough. Like, there was no body scan, no groping, no nothing. I did find an interesting way to annoy the TSA people, though. And it's a totally, you know, can't get in any trouble for it either. Because, you know, there's a thing now, if you get a laptop, they want you to take it out and set it on top of your bag. I guess because they're lazy, because like they want less, they just don't want to be bothered to open the unzip the thing. So I pretended that I didn't know that, and I just put the laptop bag in the little bin, and I just shoved it under the rollers. And the woman said, "Sir, is that a laptop?" And then I pretended I didn't hear her. I said, "Pardon me?" And she said, "Sir, is that a laptop?" And I said, "I'm sorry, it's my trick ear. You have to speak up a little bit." And she said, "Sir, is that a laptop?" And I said, "Laptop?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Ah, yes, it is." And she said, "You'll need to take it out of the bag." And I said, "What?" And she said, "You'll need to take it out of the bag." But by this time, I had already put it down on the rollers, and it was already going all the way through. And so then it just, you know, and then it caused a whole ruckus for which I could not be held accountable because she had not yet told me to take it out and set it on
top.
So it was just a little subtle form of defiance. I was on the plane. Sitting next to me, by the way, on the plane was a couple who the entire flight were sneezing and eating brownies directly out of the pan. How do they even get a pan of brownies on the plane?
A pan of brownies.
I couldn't even get pocket change through the goddamn x-ray machine. The couple to the left of me, some Chris Christopherson-looking guy and his wife, sneezing and eating brownies out of a pan next to me on the flight.
Was it a plastic pan of brownies?
It looked to be a metal pan. But I mean, in
how
any
do you
event,
get a big metal pan?
How would
pan?
You carry a metal... How would you carry a pan of brownies onto an airplane at this point in time? Just looking over and then shoving brownies into their face out of a pan, WTF, and then just licking their fingers clean and sneezing through the entire flight. Kill me.
Dear God.
God, this world is just one big friggin' zoo. All right. I'm done.
I did think about you, though, during my whole hospital thing, because I was, when we realized Patrick could wear whatever clothes he wanted, and so get him, like, his flannel pajama pants, I'd bring him a collection of T-shirts. And I realized that pretty much every T-shirt he owns is black and has some message on it that is violent.
Awesome.
And started trying to find things that would be appropriate for, like, working around the hospital, trying to find things that don't involve, like, guns or, like, you know, humor that involves, like, killing people.
Right, right. Or something involving, like, an inappropriate act being taken in the presence of children.
Right.
Yes. I did wear my my crescent and my star shirt through airport security. They didn't give me any guff about that. I did get the hairy eyeball from a couple people once I landed in Salt Lake, though. They didn't like the cut of my jib at all. And then my...
Surprising.
And then my mother-in-law's opening words to me were not, hello, good to see you. It was like, her opening statement to me when I arrived in Provo was, is that a Muslim shirt? So that's my entire trip right there. There you go. Hey, before we do some headlines and take a break, you mentioned that I have here some food. This is from Cheryl.
You do.
She said to boost our mood, she gave us, I don't know where she got these, from Cinnabon, classic cinnamon roll flavor candy canes.
Ooh, interesting.
There you go. Not as interesting as these, Don. You know what I've got back here?
No. I don't
Close your eyes. What does this sound like? It's not bugles.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I swear to God, this is from the vending machine at the CW, because we were doing Outlook Portland this morning. From the vending machine at the CW, the Gossip Girl Network, Cable Channel 3, I have here, from the potato chip rack in the vending machine, I have Burger King cheesy fries.
What?
It's a bag. This is right next to the Doritos in the machine and the Funyuns. Burger King cheesy fries with flame fresh taste, Don.
Okay.
In a bag.
My mind is officially boggled.
All right, so we can try these when we come
okay.
back. Let's do a couple of headlines here, and then we'll take a break and come back on the other side. We get the Week in Geek coming up, greatest songs ever made, Nazi Watch, Penis Watch, all of that. This, however, is...
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Texas mother said her son was stapled to a wall by classmates and his teacher did nothing to stop it. Mary Koch said her 14-year-old boy was pinned to a wall with a staple gun during his fifth period class at Carrizo Springs High School last week. They are supposed to protect him, Koch said. They weren't doing that. If that nail gun would have gotten out of place, he could have gotten hurt or he could have gotten killed.
Yes.
Koch said she knows some of her son's classmates took cell phone footage of the incident,
of course they did.
Which has been confiscated by the district. She also said no one there did anything to help her son, including the teacher. The mother said her son had been hung and tied up before in this same class period. Until this recent incident, however, he was too embarrassed to speak
now,
out.
When you say hung and tied up, but they stapled him?
They stapled him to the wall.
But, I mean, with how old is he?
14.
Well, these could have been like regular staples. What kind of staples would hold a 14-year-old to the wall? And what would the wall, even if you had industrial staples, what could the wall possibly have been made of that it would have supported his weight? I call shenanigans on the story.
Well, he could be a skinny little guy, and yeah, there's a lot of staples.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, but I mean, but through his clothing?
Well, probably not through, like, his wrist or anything
Jesus. Like Jesus. I'm glad we both went to the same place. By the way, I watched that Louis C.K. episode. Again, it was on. There was like a rerun of that where the guy comes in. He's talking like the medical description of the flagellation and the scourging and the whatever. That's some fine television, that
it
Louis
is.
C.K. program. I just call shenanigans on the fact that they were able to staple a kid to a wall. Because if they're in a classroom, you wouldn't have access to industrial staples, you would think. And regular staples are not going to go through clothing into a wall. Not in sufficient amounts to hold him up.
There might have been a staple gun, though, because the teacher was, like, mounting certain things on the wall for visual aids or something. And
well,
the kids
maybe.
Went, hey, staple gun, what'll we do with it? Well, we hate this kid.
Put Jerry on the wall.
Let's put him up on the wall.
All right. No, I guess I could see that happening. Mm. All right.
If a soldier doesn't believe that the president of the United States is a U.S. citizen,
oh, God.
Rick Emerson, does he still have to follow military orders?
I think the answer to that's a resounding yes.
Yeah, that pretty much is the answer. The case is being considered in military court today of Lieutenant Colonel Terrence Lakin, an 18-year Army vet, an 18-year Army vet, by the way, who has... refused deployment, redeployment to Afghanistan on the grounds that our commander-in-chief might secretly be a Kenyan. In videos posted to YouTube, Lakin said he had no choice but to not show up for duty at Fort Campbell in Kentucky, but added he would gladly deploy if Obama's birth certificate were provided and verified. Unfortunately, neither Obama's home state of Hawaii nor the military courts have much sympathy for him. Hawaii state officials say they've already seen and confirmed the certificate. And last September, a military judge ruled that being a birther is not an acceptable reason to skirt military duty.
Let me ask you, and I'm not saying – I know that you're not one of these people. Have any of these guys ever explained how it is that a birth announcement would have appeared in the Hawaii newspaper in like 1952 or whatever if he was not really born here? Leaving the issue of the birth certificate aside, let's just take that insanity off the table for now. I haven't heard anybody explain why it would have been in the paper.
I don't think it really matters. This is a level of crazy that is directly connected to people finding some way to justify what basically is like, he's a black man. We don't like him. I don't want him to be my president because he's a black man.
I mean,
and so coming up with some crazy.
I mean, I get that. I mean, I get that it is a projection of racism that they cannot admit to themselves or to others.
But if one thing about this that's crazy doesn't make sense, it's like, I suppose.
I just like to see the gears turn. That's my thing. Like, I just enjoy seeing them. I enjoy seeing them come up with responses to questions because you like to see how their brain is going to fabricate like the next stage of the delusion, you know?
Yeah, I imagine that many of them say that, you know, it's probably some kind of government conspiracy that they faked.
They went back and planted the newspaper, the microfiche.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
If, as his attorney suspects, he's convicted of something, unquote, which apparently are the words of his attorney.
Really?
That he might be convicted of something.
Sounds like real crackerjack legal defense you got there.
He'll face a dishonorable discharge and over 3 years in prison.
Well, good for you, Dick. All right, there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We want to thank you for joining us today. Still to come, we've got Mr. Aaron Duran's Week in Geek. That's coming up here. And it's time set. Apparently tonight is – well, I don't want to give it away. But Aaron is hosting an event tonight, this evening. That is Tuesday, December 14th. So more on that. You're transfixed by these cheesy fries, aren't you?
No, actually what I've been doing, I've been staring at the – I saw earlier the Cinnabon – box.
The box. You didn't see what they were,
and I kept
though.
Going, cinnamon rolls, And I didn't know what it was. And then you revealed that they were cinnamon bun-flavored candy canes. And so, again, you have brought in two food items today that are just completely blowing my mind because they just don't make any sense.
Let me just say, this is from the back. These richly flavored candy canes. You know, I understand that we have sort of an elastic attitude toward language in this country, but certain hyphens learn them. Let's see. These richly flavored candy canes recreate Cinnabon's signature Macara cinnamon. What is Macara cinnamon? Is that a made-up thing?
The Cinnabon people claim that they use some special kind of cinnamon that's better than every other kind of cinnamon.
Macara cinnamon and sweet vanilla frosting in a delicious holiday treat you'll want to share with the whole family, they claim, of these candy canes. I have to say they're relatively low in calories. They're a mere 55 calories. So I haven't tried these. All I know is that after – I think she got them from her mom or something. I think Cheryl's mom dug these up somewhere and then gave them to Cheryl, who gave them to presumably bring in here after Outlook Portland. Would you? I was just opening the little pressure seal there. Would you like to try one?
Sure, why not?
All right. What do you want to try first? These are the Burger King cheesy fries I got out of the vending machine.
I think I should go with the salty thing first and then the sweet thing.
All right. We'll open these in just a second. I want to say that this exciting culinary excursion is brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages. You can go there and you should go there. I urge you to go there. I am ordering you. I'm threatening you, in fact.
For the love of God, go there.
For the love of God, if you value the lives of your loved ones, you'll go there today, and you'll send me photographic evidence that you have done so. Don't make me go to the next step. Sorrell's Vintages can be found at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, right across from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. And Daniel is the proprietor of Sorrell's Vintages. It is really a great place. We were talking about – you sent me this link, and I haven't looked at this yet, but it's the Mad Men – is it the Mad Men characters, if they were D&D characters?
Well, it's using the whole process of character alignment, like lawful good, chaotic evil, that sort of thing,
right.
to illustrate like different characters in Mad Men, you know, like what they are, like, you know, like Betty Draper is chaotic evil,
okay,
and Don is true neutral. He's sort of in dead center in the middle of the chart.
All right, so Peggy Olson, for example, neutral good, and let's see. Joan Holloway, lawful neutral. Pete Campbell, lawful evil. In that he is a stickler for the rules, but is also a terrible person.
Right.
All right. Okay. Excellent. That's fantastic. I'm going to file that away for later. What was my point? Oh, Mad Men. We talk about Sorel's Vintages as being the home to many things from the Mad Men era or the Atomic Age era. Furniture from, speaking of dried crumbled onions that come out of a box, whose only purpose, and here's the thing. And
I've never seen another recipe for anything that uses those.
Because there wouldn't be. I mean, why? What would you possibly need those? Nothing. You can tell that something is amiss in the recipe by dint of the fact that it is then prescribed that you add something to it to reinstitute some sort of texture or snap to the food. Because everything else has been cooked until it's some sort of sludgy, watery goo. See also, by the way, this thing, which I do as well because I'm a hick, and because apparently all trashy people must do this, this idea that you must add crumpled up potato chips to your casserole, which now here's the thing.
I have never done that, by the way.
Breadcrumbs,
I'll do breadcrumbs, but I have never done like Ritz crackers or potato chips or something on top of a casserole.
Here's another use for the dried onions. Doesn't that go into California dip?
No, that's the actual onion soup.
The
mix.
Soup, but it's dried onion soup
right.
mix, so it's in the ballpark, but not the same thing. My mom has an astounding number of cookbooks, and thankfully, she really just used she stuck to that classic Betty Crocker cookbook most of the time. But there is some cookbook she has somewhere that's talking about how to make some damn casserole. It's always casseroles. I don't know if the 50s were just lousy with it was like a casserole fetish, but it was a whole thing about and for a garnish, crumple up potato chips and just sprinkle them liberally over the top. I mean, what kind of hell dimension do you come from? Anyway, but that's why now as an adult, I put chips or pretzels or whatever on like every sandwich I eat. It's like I'm just constitutionally incapable of not doing it.
I'm telling you, the first time I had at Mormon Book Club and I had those funeral potatoes and I was going, and I didn't know what it was. I find out later that it's just a big greasy fist around your heart. But, you know, the frozen hash browns and onions and cream of mushroom soup mix and then crumple up these potato chips and sprinkle them all over the top. And, you know, the thing is, though, it's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just basically injecting cholesterol directly into your own veins, but it's delicious.
It is sort of a de facto last meal in any event. So, blah, blah, blah. Da, 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 da. Days of yesteryear, blah, blah, blah. Sorel's Vintages is a place you can go as we get closer to the holidays and closer to gift-giving season. Now, you got 11 days before Christmas. And you know what? Depending on what holiday you're buying for, you know, maybe you're going to be fashionably late or whatever. You got, I mean, really, charitably speaking, you know, like another 2-3 weeks depending on what holiday you're giving for and to whom. So you really owe it to yourself to go to Sorel's Vintages right now. They're 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. One side is all vintage furniture, and it is, again, from the 50s to the early 70s, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's the small items like the cocktail set or the ashtray, the larger items, there's some clocks that hang. They've got a clock there. I mentioned, I think, the first time we talked about them, it was like the one I had growing up, which is really, it's just a beautiful piece of, it's just sort of a sculpted piece of iron. And the middle is this really, really beautiful, sort of understated yet ornate at the same time, clock that I think my grandmother actually had. And it's fantastic. So you go to the other side, you're going to see a lot of brand new items. And later on this week, we're going to talk to Daniel. He's going to be highlighting a few specific things for us. Most of the stuff on the other side, under 25, a lot of it under 5. And, the term stocking stuffer, but it's sort of smaller gift.
That's the thing. You see a store like this and you think it's on Hawthorne and they have all this gorgeous furniture. I'll bet everything's really, really expensive.
Not the case.
And that is not the case.
It is not the case. And so you go to the one side where there's the furniture, the other side, sort of a giftorial garnish, if you will. So tell me you heard it here. If you would, that is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, Sorel's Vintages. And please do tell me you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson radio program where we come back. We'll eat these Burger King cheesy fries.
Oh, okay.
They just look terrible, don't they? But in a sort of awesome way. See, this is what I'm saying. This is the difference between crumpled up potato chips on your green beans or whatever and, like, actual junk food that announces itself as being junk food.
After our adventures with, like, the cheeseburger-flavored potato chips and things like that, I'm not as excited by these things as I used to be.
You'll be even more excited, or not as the case may be, when I tell you that behind this curtain, three more exotic items from the same snack machine. Don't go anywhere!
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. Aaron Duran here of GeekInTheCity.com, and this is your week in Geek.
There's a 68.71% chance you're right.
First, tonight at 7 p.m. at the Vendetta Bar on the corner of Northeast Skidmore and North Williams. Geek Trivia Night celebrates its one-year anniversary, and you are invited. Bringing back the original host and questions by this very geek, this is your moment to truly test your geek might for prizes and honor.
Yes.
Next, Thursday night at midnight, or really friggin' early on Friday, depending on your outlook on life, at the Roseway Theater, Court and Fatboy present the Portland premiere of Tron Legacy. Tickets are only $9 to watch the dude hang out in the coolest friggin' Daft Punk video of all time. Finally, this being a short week in geekery here in the City of Roses, I want to remind all you glorious listeners, if you have a geek-themed event and would like to have it appear on the Week in Geek, drop us an email at aaron@geekinthecity.com. If the event be worthy, you shall hear it here. I'm Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and that was your Week in Geek.
End of line.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's hard to be a Jew on Christmas. My friends won't let me join in any games. And I can't sing Christmas songs or decorate a Christmas tree or leave water out for Rudolph, 'cause there's something wrong with me. My people don't believe in Jesus Christ's divinity. I'm a Jew, a lonely Jew on Christmas. Hanukkah is nice, but why is it that Santa passes over my house every year? And instead of Jew, a lonely Jew, I'd be merry, but I'm Hebrew on Christmas. That
song is great for any number of reasons, but chief among them, that he found something to rhyme with Latke.
Yes.
Which is, that's really a rare talent that Trey Parker has. Isn't that Latke? That's like a potato pancake sort of a thing, isn't it? It's like a thick sort of, like an unleavened thing that is leavened. One of the two. What's leavened?
Leavened is...
with yeast.
Yeast or baking soda or something like that.
It is the...
A chemical process that causes it to rise.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's a thing you didn't think we were going to be saying today, Don. We have a call coming in from Romania.
Wow.
Shall we answer it?
Oh, please.
All right. Hello, Romanian listener. Sign in, please. Who might this be?
Hello?
Hello. Hi. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Rick?
I am fantastic.
That Romanian accent is thick.
No, I didn't say he was Romanian.
Oh.
He was in Romania. I'm stepping on you. I'll just back off here. What is your name, sir?
My name is Rob.
And Rob, you are.
I actually live in the Portland Beaverton area, and I'm here on business in Romania.
So, what sort of business is conducted in Romania? I mean, apart from impalings.
Well, we are. I actually work for a giant chip company in the Hillsborough area.
Ah, yes.
And we are starting up a new site here doing software development. And I've been here doing some training.
Now, is Romania, and you're in Bucharest, correct?
Correct.
Is Romania like a real up and coming segment of the chip making world? Is that are they a comer?
Well, they are an up-and-comer in the software technology. development, especially in the open source world, Linux and et cetera.
Now, of course, I'm just speculating here and speaking in you know, sort of vague theoretical ways. Is Romania a good place to have a company because perhaps people there are very industrious and work very hard, maybe without expecting the same kind of cushy rewards or income that we receive here in the States?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Rick.
Of course not. Of course you wouldn't.
They are a new member of the EU, the European Union, and they have the same expectations and dreams as everyone else.
All right, just that they're working their way up the ladder as we all must.
Of course.
Excellent. So are you listening to now? Are you listening to the show now, or are you merely calling in now?
I'm just calling in. I actually tried to listen earlier, and I wasn't able to actually listen live. I was having problems with the streaming.
Is it I don't mean to be snarky when I say this, but I mean the internet access in Romania, is that where would you rank that compared to like what it is in America? If America's a 10, where's Romania?
I would say it's the access that I've had so far, working either in our office or from a hotel, is probably about a 7 or an 8. It's actually pretty good.
You're in Romania, which is also where – now, correct me if I'm wrong on this. Is Transylvania not in Romania?
Yeah, no, it is. It's not near Bucharest, but it is in Romania.
I have no idea how big anything is, so it's like I always just assume – whenever I hear about a country, I always just assume that all the towns are like within sight of one another. So how long are you going to be in Romania for?
Till the end of the week.
And, I mean, is it just – now, when you go there as part of a large American concern, as they say, you're there with an American company, is it a thing where you're basically traveling in sort of a bubble or a womb where, like, you're at a hotel where they speak English and they serve sort of food that you would be familiar with? Or is it a thing where they kind of try to accomplish that, but you're also, like, steeped in the Romanian experience?
I'd say probably somewhere in between. I wouldn't really call it an American experience, that's for sure. You're definitely exposed to the local culture and language and the food.
In terms of food? I mean, now is it because Don, of course, is the culinary one here. But I feel compelled to ask. You know, it's such a hack question, but I always want to know this kind of stuff about like something like bizarre that is accepted there is just a normal daily meal or a staple or something that strikes you as odd. Is there anything really weird you've seen or eaten?
Not really. So far, it's been I don't know what to compare it to. Nothing has struck me yet as being all that odd.
What about?
I mean, I've traveled. I was going to say I've traveled to China and I've experienced a lot more differences, if you will.
What about the Romanian women? Are they fetching? Are they a handsome group of people, or are they more on the dim light side of things?
I would say that they rank up there. They're actually pretty good looking.
Now, I have to say that's – and again, this is maybe my own American biases, but I sort of just – when I picture women in Romania, I guess I just – for some reason, they're all – I don't know why I get this image, but when I picture women in Romania, I all picture them wearing not exactly a burqa, but kind of like that thing that Sally Field wore in The Flying Nun, where it's like almost like a habit with the weird flippy things on the head. But then they're balancing baskets of fruit on top. So I think I'm conflating a whole lot of different cultures there.
I don't think you're thinking of Romania at all.
No, I'm really not. Don, do you have any questions about –
I think you might be thinking of Romania about like 50 or 60 years ago.
or just more likely some crazy place that I've made up in my head. Don, do you have questions about Romania or Bucharest?
None whatsoever.
Are you kidding me?
No, I got nothing.
Now, Romania.
This completely took me by surprise. I'm like, Romania, awesome. And I'm just kind of sitting here going, yay.
Now, I have to ask now on behalf of the many men and not a few women in the audience who want to know this sort of thing. Talk to me about the cultural presence, if any, of Vlad the Impaler. that's the thing. But like, if you were to pull this audience right now, like, and you go, what do you know about Romania? He's like 80% of people go, Vlad the Impaler. That's the first thing they come up. Well, and the rest will just say Cheap Trick because they'll think I'm talking about Budapest, not Bucharest. So do you see like Vlad, stuff anywhere? Because that's got to be a weird part of their tourism industry right now in a strange way.
I would think more in Transylvania. That's probably really true. Before I came here, to be honest, I didn't know a lot about Romania. But I was with some coworkers, and we were trying to find the normal tourist things to bring back as presents. And we were looking for something with Vlad on it. And we actually had to look high and low for it and had a hard time finding it.
Do people get a little testy if you ask about Vlad the Impaler? You know, is that sort of like I met a guy. I met a guy one time who he had gone to Kent State. And it's like when you meet somebody who went to Kent State, it's like you don't want to just immediately ask about the whole shooting thing and like, you know, what do they still talk about? But it's the first thing that comes to mind. How did people react when you were looking for Vlad the Impaler stuff?
Kind of the gosh, there's those tourists again looking for something about Vlad.
Those,
kind of the roll of the eye and kind of the shrug.
Those kooky Americans and their staking fetish. let's see. It seems like there was something else I was going to ask. Let's see. I've already gone the Vlad the Impaler route. One final question, actually, how is this costing you like a billion dollars? You're calling on Skype, so I don't even know if that costs you anything when it's in Romania.
No, it's actually included with the hotel.
Bam! There we go. Was Romania the place where they and maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Was it the place where they had that Kuchesko guy who was in office some time ago? Yeah, and then they fixed his little red wagon. They dragged him and his whole family out and just like flogged him by the heels or something.
When I was coming in from the airport, the taxi driver made a point to drive past where he gave a speech and the crowd turned on him, and basically he had to run for his life.
You know what?
They were pretty proud about that.
You know what's weird is I saw this episode of No Reservations, the Bourdain show, and he was in Romania, and it was the same thing. He was talking to some guy who was there because Ceausescu was this horrible dictator, and he was looting the whole place. It was a kleptocracy, as they say. He was just looting the whole joint and just, you know, was oppressive. And he was out giving some speech about, like, and I am awesome. You know, and it was just a whole speech about how he ruled. And the crowd, I think, at one point, like, they just said, like, F that. Like, they reached, like, a critical density of how much of his crap they were going to take. And they just turned on him. And then within, like, an hour, it's like his headless body was just sort of like, just swinging back and forth. Like, the guy that Bourdain was talking to was like, and I was there. It was a glorious day. His head rolled down street like a soccer ball. And it was like he couldn't wait to point out, you know, and blood, it filled the streets like the Ganges. It's a glorious day, Tony. And so I just love a country that just embraces the day that they just strung a guy up and just parted him out like that. It's awesome. Excellent. What is the – how long is the flight? What is it? Is it a million hours on the plane?
It was about an almost 10-hour flight to Amsterdam and then another 3-hour flight from Amsterdam to Bucharest.
I now am legally required to ask – do you got a stopover in Amsterdam? Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
It was just in the airport.
All right. Just checking. All right. All right, my friend. This is Rob, who is calling us from Bucharest, Hungary right now. And so we got to get a map or something where it's like we have received calls from. Because we got London. We got – where the hell was the guy? There's Rotterdam, the Netherlands. But then there was the guy from London who was calling from –
well, this guy was in China.
There was a guy in China. Yeah. No, Japan.
Japan.
That's a listener of ours in Japan. So now we got Romania. So awesome.
We need a map and pins.
That's what I'm saying. Or just like a Google map and some things or whatever. Travel safe, my friend. If we don't talk to you again, have a safe and enjoyable flight back. And thank you for calling us and giving us one more area of the world to which we have brought our entertainment.
No problem, and I just want to be able to say that I was the first person to call you from Romania.
Bam! There you go. That is Rob, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. There you go. That's Rob.
Wow. Rob?
Wow, science is weird. All right.
Hey, I love the future.
And the thing is, like, the future is now.
I know.
It's just so effed. I mean, it's great, but we're going to – speaking of science, we're going to open these Burger King cheesy fries right now.
Okay.
This Burger King cheesy fry tasting.
Now, these are supposed to taste like French fries with cheese on them.
Yes, I believe – now – well, let me just say, this Burger King cheesy fry tasting is brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at 503-252-1609. They use science every day at Squires. And I can say, so far, they haven't set the joint on fire.
No.
Nothing's exploded. That day that all the power was out, you know, I think they were, like, getting their generation on down there. And they, you know, it's just, you know, I'm just saying, when the apocalypse comes, this is really the bottom line. You want Joe Squires and Squires Electric on your side.
Yeah.
Because, as Stephen King said in The Stand, divining the will of God becomes a lot less important than like getting the lights on and finding a way to keep your meat from spoiling. So just say, make friends with an electrician now, because as we saw in Walking Dead, you run out of power, and then suddenly it's like a, you know, it's like a, lab-wide cleansing happens. So you don't want that. So
that would not have happened if Joe Squires was there, by the way, because he would have just like, you know, grabbed some duct tape and some you know, paper clips, you know, and some old chewing gum, and he would have just put it all back together and made it work.
And don't you get the feeling that like he could have just rounded up some batteries or something?
Yeah.
Well, like in Breaking Bad, which you have not watched, right?
No.
Oh, see. I'm telling you right now, it's you really, this is the only time I'll say this, I don't want to be a nag about it. You really are honestly missing out on like one of the most, one of, pound for pound, one of the finest TV series I have ever seen in my life, if you don't watch Breaking Bad. And that is, I believe that is a near universal assessment. Because, you know, I know people watch Mad Men and they go, nothing really seems to happen. You know, like people watch The Wire and they find it too labyrinthine or complex, you know, they find it too difficult to follow. I don't know anybody that has watched Breaking Bad and has said, like, I don't get it. The only thing people said about Breaking Bad is that, like, it's very grim. It's dark enough that it becomes hard to watch. That's it. But, I mean, it's – but there's this episode where – and I won't give anything away. But there is an episode where – what's his name? Walter, who is
Brian.
Brian
yes, him.
Brian – not Cacophony. Brian – oh, for the love of God. From, you know, Malcolm in the Middle, the guy.
Yeah,
anyway,
I know who it is.
But now it's bugging me that I can't come up with his name, Brian Cranston. Where he does a whole like Skipper on Gilligan's Island thing, and like says, "Well, but we got these coconuts, and we got like you know whatever kitchen knives. I'll make it." And he does it, but it's like it's totally you buy it the entire way. You buy it all 9 yards. That's the guy you want with you. And barring him or the actual like professor, who I think is dead, you want Joe Squires there when the apocalypse happens. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or office, if it has to do with electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, wiring of any kind, now or after the fall of man, Squires Electric can probably, and it's probably much more negotiable if you wait till after the apocalypse. But there's also going to be a bit of a line there. You know, the queue is going to be extensive, so maybe, you know, you just reserve that. Now, put in a deposit or something now. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. All right, they are sponsoring this tasting of the cheesy fries. Now, I didn't know that Burger King had cheesy fries is the thing. They have their regular fries, which I don't really care for because it's like they're made out of formica.
So I don't ever eat at Burger King, so I don't really know.
Really?
No.
Do you not care for – is this like a fast food thing or a Burger King thing?
It's a Burger King thing. It's because of my distaste for mayonnaise.
Mm, yeah, but you know, they customize.
Their burgers come with like – yeah, but I don't really think – so I just ended up, you know.
That's why you go there as opposed to somewhere else because their whole shtick is that they'll make them one at a time.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like in the early days of going to Burger King, I got enough burgers that were just slathered with mayonnaise that it just gave me the sort of mental kind of distaste.
Can I just tell you that I arrived in Salt Lake and we hadn't been in Salt Lake half an hour and we found an In-N-Out burger. It was just like – Because they got them in Utah now. Because the family has now, you know, they won't go anywhere that they can't drive to in a day. But you can drive to Utah from California in a day, in less than a day. And so there are now In-N-Out burgers in Salt Lake, and in fact, one in Orem. I gotta tell you, that was like, as I said on my my blog, it was just like a meaty, greased up Prozac, just washing away the ennui of being in Utah County.
I will say this about Burger King. I said I don't eat at Burger King, but the fact is that I have like twice in the last year, and both times I tried their big expensive fancy burger, and their expensive burger is actually very good at Burger King.
At Burger King? Yeah. Are you talking about like the Whopper or something? Or the...
No, they have, everybody's got a gourmet burger
like their
now.
$6 burger kind of a thing?
Everybody has one of those now, including McDonald's.
Yeah.
But yeah, Burger King's is especially good. It's actually very good. They have one that comes with like mushrooms and Swiss cheese on it, and it's actually
see that?
Really
no, good. See that doesn't sound good. Maybe I'm going to get one of those. Here's the thing, is my wife is gone until Wednesday, because I came back early. Laura ain't here, so there's no one to tell me that I can't eat something or that it's bad for me. So we got really spoiled. We went right to the In-N-Out, and then you know what they have? What they also have, and I know they have one here, but it's like a zillion miles away. They have In-N-Out in Utah, which is like, and you know the joy of In-N-Out.
Oh,
You're
yes.
from California.
Oh yeah.
They also have, and this is maybe more of a me thing, but not entirely. They have Del Taco.
Del Taco is far superior to the Taco Bell experience, far and away.
I love Del Taco. I love Del Taco. And can I just, my last night there, Sunday going into Monday, as I was preparing the ill-fated best of us, as a matter of fact, at like 2 in the morning, so my wife is asleep. Everybody else in the house, you know, and so I just managed to, I stealthily slid out the front door. And even in Orem, that Del Taco, 24 hours a day. So it's like I just was able to, under the cover of darkness, where I'm like the only person in the city awake, I think. Everybody else is resting so they can bring glory to God. I went to Del Taco and I got those macho tacos. They have just the best thing ever.
I, under the Patrick wanted gummy bears. He was like in the hospital, so I've got to get.
Right.
And so I took that as an excuse to go to Trader Joe's, where they have really good gummy bears. They have these things called gummy tummies, and they're gummy bears, but they're shaped like little penguins.
Uh-huh.
And they have this little like fruit flavored liquid in their tummies, and they're very good. So I got them. But really, the whole reason to get them, the gummy bears at Trader Joe's, was that gave me an excuse to buy crackers and pub cheese.
Good for you.
Because I knew he was going to be in the hospital, and I was going to be home alone, so I could do nothing but just eat crackers and pub cheese.
That's
for
what I'm going to do tonight. Because that's exactly what I'm doing tonight. Because I, you know what I've decided to pick back up again? And we're getting so off. But this whole thing is brought to you by Squires Electric, by the way. All right. I just got to say, so I'm back on the house wagon now. So I, or on off the wagon. Well, whatever. I'm watching it again. Yeah. I took some time off because it was like the formula was starting to wear on me. But now I'm picking it up again.
It got a little soap opera-ish there for a while.
I'm marathoning. Well, see, and I'm only halfway through season four.
Hmm.
I'm still back where he's winnowing down the contestants.
Yeah.
So, but I'm marathoning house. I'm going to do that while eating pub cheese on crackers. Mm-hmm. All right. So apparently they have cheese fries at Burger King. And this, is, again, we have to thank Cheryl Kanakoa from the vending machine at the CW. These are, right next to the potato chips, cheesy fries flavored potato snacks. Burger King style, and there's the Burger King logo. And on the front, fries covered in what looks like a cheese goo of some kind.
Yeah.
Don, at BK, they beef with the burgers, not the price. So your flame-broiled burger is always high. They're advertising a different product in the back. Oh, here we go.
Hmm.
We've got just what you need, they say, when you're looking to satisfy the craving for cheese bliss. I don't think that's a thing people crave.
I crave cheese bliss.
That's like on the Safeway brand hot chocolate that Laura and I bought when we were decorating the tree. And it says, create chocolatey memories.
Oh, that sounds wrong.
That sounds
bad.
Does it sound like a porn film?
I swear
to God, it says create chocolatey memories.
No.
Anyway, apparently the cheesy fries are crunchy, munchy snacks, Don, doused with cheesy charm.
Someone got paid to write that.
That deliver the goods. So stop looking. The really well-written copy concludes with a flourish. Stop looking, Don. You found cheesy heaven.
Well, I have been looking for cheesy heaven, so...
I thought you were just looking for cheeses.
You know, how much I love my cheese bliss.
Do you want to try these first, or should I?
Well, yeah. Well, you try it first, and then
it's
pass
up to you.
Over, because...
It's your choice.
Way,
you should go first.
I'm just waiting for cheesy heaven.
All right.
Okay. Well, first of all, they're... they look much more appealing on the package, go figure, than... So, yeah, it looks kind of like a very dry, desiccated French fry.
It looks like a shoestring potato.
It smells like the inside of an old furniture store.
Oh, that's great.
And when you smell it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Is this like how that other snack food smelled like an armpit and we all agreed?
If you've ever been into like a really super old furniture store that hasn't turned over its inventory in like 30 years and there's this very distinct, musty, weird smell, that's the smell in this package. Yeah, okay.
Are they bad or just are you sort of indifferent to them?
They're teetering on the verge of being actually unpleasant.
But not quite. Yeah, let me ask
you
this.
No, they're unpleasant.
Really? So if I left those at your house for a while, you wouldn't eat them?
No, I probably wouldn't.
Because the thing where like people go, well, this isn't very good, and then you come back a week later and the thing is gone.
No.
All right.
Do not want.
All right. Hold on. All right.
No, first of all, smell. Smell. See what
it
I mean?
It smells exactly like the inside of an old furniture store.
See?
Or a school classroom that has been left attended over the summer.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. What thing could be floating around in the air at a furniture store in a classroom that is also on these chip things is the question.
Dust. It just smells like dust.
Plastic.
Asbestos.
Okay. Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. No, they're unpleasant.
Yeah, they're unpleasant.
Right out of the gate, I'll say that. I mean, it's like I don't need...
I was trying to give it a chance because I figured maybe... But no. No,
the jury does not need to retire.
No, those are... Yeah, and then after I swallowed and I still have the taste in my mouth, it's just awful.
You want a candy cane?
Yeah, please.
Here's a Cinnabon candy cane. You know, it just sounds like we do nothing but eat on this show.
Yeah.
Don't... Okay, I won't uncork them today.
We are people of simple pleasures.
Seriously, I got three more bags of mystery snacks back there from the CW vending machine. All right, there you go. That's that.
Okay.
Good God almighty.
If I can ever get the plastic off of this, I'll find out if this actually tastes like a cinnamon.
That's an unpleasant face you're making right there. Sorry, Cheryl's mom.
Yeah, no, this is unpleasant as well. And
excellent.
This does not taste like a Cinnabon.
There you go, SquiresElectric.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Christmas is the time to say I love you. Share the joys and laughter and the tears. Christmas is the time to say
I was about to say there's not enough Billy Squire in this world, but that's just not true.
Who is that whistling on this thing?
Some guy.
Just a guy.
Some guy. Not me, not you.
Okay.
I believe it's part of the song. Did you ever hear a song that has like some weird, you know, like there's this Rolling Stones song, Country Honk, that has, I presume is some sort of gag that seemed hilarious when they were high. It has a car honking in the beginning of it. And it's like a car, it's a real car horn honking from like outside the studio window. And so without fail, I've heard it 1,000 times. Every time I'm in my car and I hear the honk, I immediately look around thinking, hey, let me ask you this. Do you ever hear a song and you hear what sounds like a cell phone ringing in it?
I don't think so.
It doesn't happen to me much now that I got the iPhone. But back when I had my BlackBerry, it's like I just heard cell phone rings in pop music all the time. And I started to wonder if they were actually putting that in as a device to get you to pay closer attention, to perk up your interest subconsciously when you heard the song.
There is a piece of music that they use on NPR, OPB, one of the OPB programs on NPR, as like a bridge music on there. And it has something in it that sounds just like a cell phone ringing. And if I'm listening to it and I have like my earphones in, uh-huh, or something, I will actually pull the earphones out because I think that,
right,
a cell phone must be ringing somewhere, like outside. But it's faint enough that it sounds like it's ringing
in the other room.
Yeah, or it's like my phone, which is on the seat next to me, and so I have to pull the earbuds out, and then it's like not.
I think they must do that to just sort of like as just a way to sort of like goose complacent listeners. Like you're just zoning out to get you to kind of go huh, and just focus in on whatever what is happening. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian will be here, and Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me. Comedy, Comedy 101. Last Friday, he did Carol Burnett as his subject, and which was great, by the way. And I got to tell you, and I got to thank those guys, Jim and Eric Snyder, who was in, because they actually turned me around on Carol Burnett. I was persuaded to give her another shot. So
good,
because I don't dislike her. I just never really found her funny.
Yes.
And but anyway, so that was great. I forget who's coming up this week, but we will Eddie Murphy this Friday.
Okay.
He'll be doing that. So that is this Friday, Humor Me Comedy 101. Coming up later in this show, we have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. However, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
We have a penis watch.
Boy, that taste is rancid.
Yeah.
And it clings to my it just clings to the inside of my mouth like a shipwreck victim clinging to an oar.
Yeah, it's not even a matter of it coating the inside of your mouth. It's almost like it's some kind of chemical that just permeates the roof of your mouth and won't go away. Like it's soaking into your actual tissue.
I was going to say it's like they had taken some sort of a oh, my cultural thing is failing me. What is the – oh, damn it. I was going to say it was like they had taken a – what is that the thing you polish wood furniture with?
Furniture polish?
No, but there's a brand. There's like a
– Pledge?
Pledge. I was going to say it's like they – maybe. I don't even know if that's what I was going for. I was going to say it was like they'd taken lemon pledge to the armoire of my mouth. See how funny that would have been?
Except it was sort of dusty, faux, cheesy pledge.
Ugh, it's just awful. And you're right, and it just can't be. Nothing gets rid of it.
No, I've rinsed my mouth out with Vizo. I've practically gargled with the Vizo. It's still there.
You can't wash away the EGOT or the cheesy fries.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Burger King cheesy fries, you lose.
All right. What is this, your penis watch?
Yes.
Your penis watch. You know what I'm saying. No. Here's your penis watch for Tuesday.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow.
A look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow.
By the way, I'm sorry. It's so this is Cheryl wants to clarify that her mom did provide the candy canes, but in no way was her mother responsible for the Burger King cheesy fry thing. She wants to make that perfectly clear,
no,
so we don't sully her. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
20 years ago, Maryland horse farrier Martin Kenny made an unusual discovery in an excavation site where workers were erecting a new barn. He had found what appeared to be a 6-inch-long stone penis. Kenny reached out to several academic installations regarding the long-buried handcrafted phallus to see if they might be interested in the discovery. I've written to the Smithsonian and never got anything back from them, he said. I wrote and said I found this stone penis, and I'm sure someone would appreciate being able to look at this thing. But for some reason, no one was interested in Kenny's stone penis.
It's so much like a guy. You know, I have this penis here, and I just figure everybody wants to look at it. Brett Favre. Psh.
And so the phallus remained stored in a drawer for almost 2 decades. However, Kenny recently got the idea to send photos of the object to archaeologist and blogger Dr. Martin Rundqvist. After reading a post by the doctor about what appeared to be another ancient carved penis discovered in Sweden over the summer, Rundqvist contacted Kenny, confirmed that the find could very well be of academic interest. He wrote about the phallus in a post titled Another Ancient Dildo, where he commented, "It's made of sandstone or a similar rock, and to my eye, it's pretty clearly modified by human hands, though it may have originated as a fossil cavity of some ancient mollusk."
It's really hard to imagine Howard Carter writing a blog entry which was headlined, "Another Ancient Dildo."
Yeah. So after all these years, these long-ignored penis may finally get the attention it deserves. And there is a photograph of it at rickemerson.com/
Let me look at it right now,
pictures.
Just so I can sort of accompany
yes,
the...
It's apparently someone handcrafted a stone phallus for the use probably of...
why not, Don?
...of self-pleasuring.
If you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, and then... or you can just go to the website and click on the pictures link.
It's safe for work because it's science.
That's right. It's science, and also it's not real. It's, it's not a real penis. I mean, it's a real fake penis. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a real
phallus.
Ancient dildo.
Yeah, and it's, you got to say that somebody at some point spent a considerable amount of their time and energy actually carving that and shaping it. It's like when you see these, the tools and stuff they find at, they find some like campsite or some sort of a burial site. And it's like something like this. And you just wonder, like, whose job that was. Yeah, like if you just went to work one day and they were just checking the work assignments and like, you know, the Pharaoh just says he needs another stone penis. I mean, I don't know. Look, I just pass along. I'm just the foreman. You know, I'm not management.
Perhaps someone did this, though, for their own personal pleasure or that of their partner. It was like whittling, you know, on the back porch, only they made a penis.
Fair enough. I mean, it's like they have dildos made of vulcan. They have dildos made of glass dildos. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, why not stone? Stone seems like a thing. I mean, maybe if it was smoothed out.
Well, they also said that it could also rather because it's, you know, it's very old. So it's kind of petrified.
Right.
So they said it could very well have originated as a fossil cavity of some ancient mollusk.
OK, so it could have been a thing with a large member that died, yeah, or then it formed a reverse mold, yeah, which sediment then filled and fossilized.
Or some kind of a mollusk like a gooey duck or something like that that had fossilized and right, then they modified it a bit.
All right, there you go. There's your penis watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis.
I want to scrape my tongue.
I know, you just keep looking at the bag and then just looking angry.
I'm going to put them out of here.
Everything is going
out of sight,
way,
out of mind. All right, Jesus. Let's see. Oh, by the way, Rob, who was calling from Romania, he said, Rick, the one thing I really wanted to mention, I didn't get a chance to sneak in, lest the listener think we're only hiring in Romania. No, no, no. He says, speaking of this, as he described it, a prominent chip manufacturer, mm-hmm, based in Hillsboro, says, we are expanding and hiring in Portland, too. If you've got it, and this is listener to listener here, this is the Rick Emerson Show helping you.
Huh.
If you've got experience, he says, developing with the Linux kernel or with the Android OS, go check out the website for this chip manufacturer in Hillsboro. He says, we are hiring like crazy in Portland.
Oh.
He says, we're doing some amazing things with open source software. So there you go. That is from listener Rob. He says, if you have experience with Linux kernel or the Android OS development, go check out the website for that company, that chip manufacturer in Hillsboro, which I'm assuming is Intel, says we're hiring like crazy, doing some things with open source software. There you go. Bam. So awesome. Let's see. Now people just sending also all kinds of stone penis things. Oh, and then, by the way, this
of
came
course
in.
They are.
This came in a little bit later on. It's all just that and like people telling me locations of various Del Tacos in and around the state. So thank you. However, somebody does want to know, and he says, this is from a while back, but I'm from Utah, and he said, we grew up with a very fancy dish called macaroni and milk. Yes, that's just macaroni, butter, and milk.
Hmm.
Also, he says, a metric ton of salt because, you know, there's no flavor in it. Utah is a very special place. And then he says, as a bit of a coda here, I should also mention the macaroni, of course, was far from, is it al dente or dente?
Dente.
He says the macaroni is far from al dente. Mmm, squishy. So there you go. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's do one more here. We'll do greatest songs ever made.
Okay. DNA testing has confirmed the large animal shot and killed by a hunter a month ago in Missouri was an unusually large coyote, according to the Missouri Department of Conservation. The hunter killed the animal on the opening day of Missouri's November firearms deer season on November 13th. Coyotes are legal game during deer season, so the hunter shot and killed it. But when the hunter got a closer look at the animal, he wondered if he had mistakenly shot and killed a wolf, which is a protected species in Missouri. The hunter contacted the MDC, which tested the animal's DNA and determined that it was, in fact, a coyote, a 104-pound coyote.
Jesus.
That was about 3 years old.
3 years? I don't even know how big they get, but I didn't know they got that big.
They're usually the size of a medium to decent-sized dog.
Yeah.
I think they usually don't get over about 40 or 50 pounds.
104 pounds?
104-pound coyote.
Jesus. And I'm assuming that's because it was fat or something.
No.
But that was just that was all killing power right
yes.
there, and 104 pounds. All right. Well, you know, so he killed this wolf that turned out to be 3 years old, 104 pounds.
Coyote, not a wolf.
I'm sorry, coyote. Did he think it was a wolf?
He thought it was a coyote when he shot it, but then when he got up close to it, he went, holy crap, this thing's huge.
And he thought it was that. Then he thought it might have been a wolf, but it turned out to just be an absurdly large coyote.
And he was an ethical person, and he contacted the conservation people and said, I think I may have accidentally killed a wolf.
Okay.
And so then they tested, and I guess they also went, wow, that's huge. So they actually did DNA testing on it.
But coyotes, it seems like they'll kill you too.
Not as much as wolves. They're not as aggressive as wolves. They're a lot more skittish. They tend to be more scavengers, really, and they eat small game. So when they're confronted by humans,
you could distract them with a baby.
Or you could just yell at them, and a lot of times they'll just run away. They if they're rabid, of course, they'll come after you. But wolves are a lot more aggressive than coyotes are.
All right. Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, in any event, that's really nature is. I mean, it seems like nature's gearing up for something.
Yeah.
Like there's some sort of, there's going to be some southern offensive, something that's going to be unleashed later on in the winter. You heard it here first. All right. There you go. There's that for the love of God Almighty. Hey, we're going to do a greatest songs ever made here in a second, but I got to say this. So we, of course, talked about how we went to Christmas Mountain Trees. Damn me, I have the worst memory. I gotta post the video of the bailing and the shaking and the whatever in the gallery. I'll do that when we get off the air today. I will say that we had some friends come and they house sat for us this weekend while we were in Provo, and it's like mom, dad, two kids, and there was this, and I know this isn't why you're not supposed to do things for this reason, but I mean let's not deny that it's part of the appeal. So the couple and their two kids, they walk into the house and immediately the kids literally. Did like a they the kids did a whole like
McRib is back
kind of a thing when they saw the tree, because our tree is huge, and I don't mean like absurdly huge, like it goes in the middle of a bank lobby or something, but I mean it's a big tree, and of course you were talking about your tree from Christmas Mountain Trees that you even have a chance to decorate it, yeah, but it's still beautiful,
yeah, and it's a big tree. It didn't seem that big when we got it, but it's like. It's poking up at the sea. It actually, we're going to have to trim off a couple of inches. We can't put a star or anything on top of it because it's too tall.
That was our thing, too. And then it's like you got to be careful when you trim it because you'll lose the shape. So it's like it was a whole thing. That was our – it was like when I brought it in, like, oh, my God, it almost touches the ceiling. And then I didn't realize, well, that's of course – but there's nothing on top yet. And then, of course, the star is like – it's all phallic and like 9 inches. Yeah. It's like a spire reaching to heaven. So, we had to trim the top of the tree down, actually. So the tree you see in our living room now is actually not even as big as it really is. But the kids came in and they were immediately, kids love, it's like Christmas and trees and bright, shiny things and they think of presents and whatever. But the kids were just all agog at how great the tree was. And then it's like the mom and the dad, they were actually, and it's harder to impress adults because they just they've seen Christmas trees and it's like, I think if you're a parent especially, I think it's like your joy of Christmas is maybe as much as you want to introduce your kids to something fun and exciting. Your joy of Christmas might be blunted a little bit, too, by the idea of, like, you just sense the stress on the horizon. Just like, oh, God, you got to buy stuff and wrap things and there's shrieking and, relatives. And it's just, but even they actually just stood. And several times over the course of the evening, they actually would just stop and stare at the tree. As it just sounds like I'm just talking about how great I am. It has nothing to do with me. It's all like the tree. I mean, it's like my decorations, but so what? But they just stopped and they would just say, like, that is the best tree we've ever seen. And it was like, I should have gotten them on film talking about this. The point is that you are now 5 days away from Christmas. So whatever it is you're getting the tree for, I tell you, you got to do it like, you got to get it in now. And you want to do it now so you can get to Christmas Mountain Trees before they close, because they're going to stop selling. The 19th is the last day they're open. That is this coming Sunday. By the way, the same day that I will be appearing on Leverage with my mighty two sentences with a semicolon in the middle, performance on Leverage. So you want to be home in time to watch that, because that is the central focus of your Sunday evening.
This could be your entire Christmas ritual.
That's right.
You have gotten the tree. It's ready to be trimmed. You make the hot cocoa and you watch Rick while you're trimming your tree.
Exactly. It's the beginning of a new chapter in the way that you celebrate this holiday season, kids. So that is this Sunday, though. It's the last day they're going to be open. You go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. To find out, you can also go to their website, or their Facebook page, rather, which is facebook.com/Christmas Mountain. You go there, you're going to find out the directions, and the directions on the website are fantastic. They also give you a weather update, so as you get a little bit of frost or snow, you're going to know kind of what you're going to deal with. You go up there, it's an entire experience, and so you're going to get the whole McRib is back thing from your kids, not just when they see the tree decorated, they're helping to decorate it, they see with the presents underneath it, but also when they help to pick it out, and I hate to be maudlin about this, but it's just Christmas, it is time for miracles. But you're going to be able to do the whole thing next year or the year after that or 10 years from now, going like, hey, do you remember that time that we went up to the mountain and you picked out the tree? And here's the other thing. If I need to lay it on even thicker, then you will get to say about your children to other parents, and your kids will get to say to other parents. And you'll look awesome, basically, because your kids are going to get to go, and I picked it out. And see, and then you will glow
with pride.
And I
got out cocoa, and we rode on a wagon, and we picked out an orange tree.
And the thing is, the other parents are going to look, they're going to look like the lamest parents on earth.
I know. The other kids are going to go, oh, my dad took it out of a box and, like, put it together.
that's it, right? I mean, it's like, you'll be able to just smoke like every other parent within a 3-block radius. In terms of looking cool.
Take that, PTA friends. Take that, you uppity soccer moms.
And the years during which your window for looking cool in any way to your kids, that window is short and it closes rapidly. So you got to get on that. Get on the stick with that. Don't wait. So you go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com or Facebook.com/ChristmasMountain. Please tell me you heard it here on the Rick Emerson radio program, Christmas Mountain Trees.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. Certain phrases are such a part of the culture that we almost don't hear them. Even if they don't turn up in day-to-day conversation, we know them from birth, it seems. They're hardwired into our cultural DNA, and it's hard to believe that one day they weren't there, and the next day, they were. And that phrase, which occurs near the end of today's song, is certainly evocative and powerful and almost revolutionary. But despite all of that, it's just the tiniest portion of what makes this recording so fantastic. It is one of the more incorrect pieces of conventional wisdom that teenagers, quote, want to be different, end quote. Teenagers want no such thing any more than they want to pay their own rent. What they want is to be different from those that they consider old and or uncool, which for a period of time is nearly everyone they encounter. They may also want to be different from others in their peer group, even those who seem to have cornered the market on popularity. The algorithms which go into such desires and rejections are beyond our purview here today, but the bottom line is that teenagers want an experience that is completely different from some, but extremely similar to others. This never changes, by the way, though the particulars may shift throughout one's life. It's how marketers and the media are able to target commercials and movie releases and politicians. But back to the peer group. School, high school especially, is a uniquely exhilarating and horrifying experience, marked by an equal number of highs and lows, accomplishments and indignities, all of which seem to have totally removed you from the outside world and certainly from any kind of understanding which parents might have. From the morning class to the afternoon bell, life as a high school student is an endless parade of indignities, opportunities, terror, and triumph. It's also the moment when children make their first forays into romance and when they begin to separate themselves from the supervision and lifestyle of the parents and other adults. This results in a strange paradox. The most tumultuous, unstable, saddening, and stupendous times of a child's life occur when he or she is least able or likely to share their feelings with a parent. And in step the rock stars, who, ironically, capture and speak to that teen angst in a way which seems perfectly authentic, though these performances are usually long out of school themselves. When such songs are done well, and in today's recording you'll hear it done flawlessly, they act as a kind of musical arm around the shoulder, a knowing smile, an acknowledgement that, yes, the doddering fools around you have no idea what you're going through. But, the singer and songwriter declares, it'll all be okay as soon as 3 o'clock rolls around. The opening jangle, the furious backbeat, the spiraling, delirious guitar solo, the rhyming, the rhythm, the wordplay, the pure, exultant release after frustration, all are classic, and deservedly so. For rarely has anyone, let alone a former hairdresser who was 31 when he released this song, so accurately depicted the grind and the glory of being young. Oh, and as a bonus, that phrase I mentioned earlier, it's toward the end when, after what seems like a generation's worth of buildup, somebody finally breaks down a sort of cultural wall, issuing what was either a clarion call or a defiant challenge, depending on who you were. As if the singer hadn't already established his place in history, he cemented his iconic status and warned that a social jailbreak was underway by the simple, powerful phrase never before uttered. Hail, hail, rock and roll. One of the greatest songs ever made, this is Chuck Berry and School Days on the Emerson News Network.
Up in the morning and out to school, the teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math, you study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone, and the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Keep it, the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around,
finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. The drums loud and full. Rock, rock, rock and roll. Feeling is there, body and soul.
All right, then. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Join us tomorrow, by the way, when our guests will include Ms. Kelly Clark, Thursday, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with Humor Me, Comedy 101. I made a note to myself, so often we write these things down and then we forget to talk about them later. By the way, those cheese fries, it's like they're declaring it some sort of a jihad on my palate right now. They just, the siege continues.
I finally got rid of mine. I think I drank enough Vizo that it finally went away. It burned it out of my mouth.
I want one of those things that you get at the dental office to scrape your tongue, yeah. You know, or whatever. Hey, but you wrote, I wrote down this phrase because I think it's something you put on your Facebook account. Do you Twitter or you just do you Facebook via Twitter or do you do both?
I generally do both. There's this thing, it's complicated. There's this program called TweetDeck that's supposed to do both, but for some reason it doesn't like my Facebook account. It doesn't want to connect with it for some reason.
Oh God, were you here? Did I tell you about the thing with the conversation David Walker and I had when he was here about Twitter?
No.
So we were. I'll keep this brief because I know that everybody had heard it and then like heard me telling, I think, Eric Snyder about it or something. But, you know, at the beginning of the show, David Walker was here and I was like, hey, he can also be contacted via – and I was about to give out his Twitter. And I said, well, wait a minute. Do you have a Twitter thing? And he goes, well, yeah, but I don't use it. He's like, I registered it, but I've never – and he, again, won't say tweeted. Yeah. He's like, I've never used it. And I said, why? And he goes, well, it seems really complicated. And Sarah and Greg have been lamenting that forever. Like their whole thing is they're trying to use it more. Well, they're like me. They know how to post something and hit send.
Yeah.
But like every other function on Twitter is just like a mystery to them.
Oh.
And so we had a whole conversation about like lists and trending and following and retweeting and, you know, what the hashtag – and the hashtags are the thing that like David Walker and I go, I don't get it. And so so people were emailing and texting and, Twittering, trying to explain it to us. And then our good friend Andy called up to try to like patiently explain the hashtag thing. And it was like he really did a yeoman's job of trying to make it all clear. Mm-hmm. But it's like he got to some point about how you run Twitter. And it's like we just asked – it was so clear that we were just idiots, Dave and I. We were just like, but how do you – whatever. And it's like I'll have to find it and play it back for you tomorrow. Because in exasperation, we asked one idiotic question too many. And he just – Andy's patient trying to – and he just goes, look, I'm just a baker. And he hung up.
Oh, you finally broke Andy.
It was great.
After all these years.
It was just like – it was like he was trying to teach a cow how to read a dictionary or something. It just didn't – it was fantastic. And then as a result of that, incidentally, mm-hmm. a joke – you'd think I would know my own power by now, and I clearly do not because it's a power that I can only use inadvertently and in ways I don't wish to. So I made a joke about hashtags and categorizing things. So thanks to my offhanded flip, presumably humorous response, and the, you know, the generally, well, you and I have talked about the strange ways in which the audience shows its love. There is now a whole thing on Facebook, any number of, or on Twitter, any number of tweets that are hashtagged with ignorant radio host at the end. Thank you so much, jackasses. I appreciate that. But you either Twittered or Facebooked something about the Wolfgang Puck.
Oh, yeah.
What was the deal with that?
Last night, Patrick, you know, Patrick's up and kind of walking around. We'll take these walks because he's bored. So we went to walk down to the cafeteria, and apparently the cafeteria closes fairly early in the evening. But there's this little area that has a bunch of vending machines. So it's like you can get the crappy sandwich out of the rotating thing. And then they have many different sodas and candies.
Is it like the rotating thing
things.
That's like the automat sort of?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, where you're like, oh, you can get like a $3 cup of yogurt or a ham sandwich that's been in there for 6 years.
Iceberg lettuce.
But they had one specific machine, this one giant super space-agey machine. And if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see it. I put it on my Facebook page. And it's Wolfgang Puck Coffee. And it actually has a big photograph of Wolfgang Puck on it, like handling coffee beans or something. And it has like coffee and decaf coffee. And then there's this whole thing of coffee drinks where it mixes crap together in the machine. So you can have like hot cocoa, or you can have a mocha, or you can have like a special, they call it a jungle mocha, which I don't know why it's a jungle mocha. It's like they add vanilla.
Yeah, is there some sort of a distinction that is made there?
And some kind of berry flavored thing that is still a coffee drink, which just sounded vile. But it's like there's sort of this attempt to kind of fool you into thinking you're going to get this kind of Starbucksy experience out of a machine. And you know something? It's coffee out of a machine.
I'm looking at it now. It's like the machine, the color scheme. It's got the fine, like the bone china overflowing with the dry beans on the front. Like you're trying to make it look all upscale. And it's just like a vending machine.
And I paid $1.50 and I got a cup of coffee. And it was vending machine coffee. It was a little bit better than most vending machine coffee, but it was still vending machine coffee. Patrick had some hot cocoa and I was like, how is it? And he's like, eh. Because, you know, it's still just, you know, powder being mixed with hot water and then squirted into a cup.
Now, Wolfgang Puck seems to do a lot of this sort of thing. And here's why I say that. And it's with coffee, too. Now, he made the most amazing product a couple years ago. Amazing, not because it was good, but just it was sort of interesting. Have you seen that the Wolfgang Puck, they sell it still at Fred Meyer thing, the Wolfgang Puck self-heating espresso?
Yes, I've seen that. I've never actually tried it, but I've seen those.
It is awesome. If anybody hasn't seen this, it's basically like a it looks like a Starbucks cup, but made out of metal. So it's basically the shape of like a large Starbucks cup, but again, it's made out of metal, like a sort of, you know, like soda can metal. And you buy it, and you twist the bottom of the can, and there's a chemical reaction that takes place, and it's basically a little can of Sterno. And you twist the bottom of the can, a chemical reaction takes place. And it within like 2 minutes, it heats the beverage inside to like 140 degrees.
Yeah.
And then you open the top and so it's like off the shelf, you turn it, and then piping hot mocha or whatever, like right out of the can, which I guess you take like shopping at camping or something like that if you can't live without, you know, your Wolfgang Puck.
I guess.
So my question is, and I know this sounds like an idiotic thing to ask, but I don't know anything about like the world of cooking or whatever. But Wolfgang Puck he's like a reputable guy. Like he's a real chef, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not some hack.
No, he's a really good chef. He was a really good chef. He's just it's interesting because when I finished culinary school, I had to do an internship somewhere. And I went back to L.A. and I did an internship at Citrus, which is on Melrose and is owned by Michel Richard, who is also a very high-end and fairly well-known and respected thing. And he hated Wolfgang Puck so much.
Awesome.
He just hated him, mainly because, you know, Puck was – It was the 80s, and Puck was basically the first real celebrity chef.
Right.
He was the first guy. He started selling, you know, he put his name on frozen pizzas.
Right.
And they were really good high-end frozen pizzas, but still it was, you know, line of frozen pizzas.
Déclassé.
Yeah, it was considered kind of gauche and that he had become a businessman first and a chef second, you know, so because I guess Spago was his restaurant and stuff. But, you know, he started out as a really excellent chef. He still, cooks to some degree.
At this point, would you say that the Puck name on a product it can be taken as a reputable indication that it might be better than other products of that type?
I think think so. I think he, yeah, I think his people, his Puck Enterprises, I think they still want to make sure that the name Wolfgang Puck, you know, isn't put on anything that's going to be complete crap. I mean, there was a line of canned soups, and I think they still make those, and I've never tried them because I've always thought, you know, well, how far superior can canned soups really
Seriously.
Be?
You know, I think that guy, the Puck from the real world, ought to do like his own line of, just like a line of competing product, you know, to show the Puck with a big, like, signature, and then just like his spotty, like, you know, like wart covered face on the front of him. I have no ending for the show, so we'll just say thanks for listening. Join us tomorrow, by the way, when our guests will include Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Comedy 101, and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology manager, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Hagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. And again, we want to thank everybody who's been filling in the last couple of days and is, you know, here and there as Patrick's recovery and surgery and all this stuff happens. You know, we want to thank everybody who's sort of pitching in, as well as Thomas Gill, who got us going again yesterday on this end, and Robert Wagner, who got Legion of News going again yesterday, and so forth. So Patrick is a couple hours away from surgery, so our thoughts are with him. So
yes.
convey a playful chuck on the shoulder.
I will indeed.
All right. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all and so forth. It is Tuesday, December 14th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. We will play ourselves out with this. This is going out to our good friend Patrick from everybody here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is a little Joey Ramone for our friend Patrick on this Tuesday. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program encoring next after Legion of News. Thank you for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.